Cap.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio. The NBA playoffs, two blowouts last night in Game 5 as Toronto goes up 3-2 on the Sixers, winning by 36. Nuggets with a blowout win over Portland, they go up 3-2. Tonight, Game 5, Golden State. Game 5, Milwaukee Celtics. Boston needs a win just to keep their hopes alive, while Game 5 in Oakland could be very interesting between the Warriors and the Rockets. Both teams have won both of their games at home. But last night was also a Game 7 in the NHL. The St. Louis Blues beat the Dallas Stars 2-1 to advance in double overtime. No sport does this better. I mean, look, eventually in soccer, for example, they have to go to penalty kicks, and you know, football will play until somebody scores. But the excitement and energy of a overtime Stanley Cup playoff hockey game, especially when it's Game 7, is incredible. Imagine it going into double overtime, and that's what you had last night between the Blues and the Stars. But here's a side story to this that I find fascinating. And I think somebody in the NHL, this is probably one of the reasons why it just doesn't, make a mark. It just needs to, it needs a bigger radar blip. The St. Louis Blues on January 2nd had the worst record in the NHL. I shouldn't say record. Probably more accurate is the least amount of points in the NHL. That means they were heading towards a first-round pick, second-round pick in the draft. The least amount of points in the NHL. And they turned their season around. Started playing a lot better, made a move, got into the postseason. Got into the postseason pretty good. I think they ended up being a strong six in the Western Conference. But because of this wide open, all these division leaders were losing, the Blues got through the first two rounds of the playoffs. Seven-game series against the Stars, and now they're playing in the Western Conference Finals. Imagine if this happened in the NBA. Imagine if on January 3rd, a team was heading towards the lottery with an absolute, almost an absolute chance of landing one of the top three picks because their season was terrible. And they turned their season around, and now we're heading to the Eastern or Western Conference Finals. Think about how the NBA would have latched onto that story. Listen, in the NFL, if some team started 1-7, and played for the AFC-NFC Conference Championship, how they would latch onto that story. The NHL, many of you didn't even know that happened.
This is SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. So I was saying earlier, the St. Louis Blues had the lowest amount of points on January 2nd. I don't know what that is, like maybe halfway through the season, a little less than halfway through the season. So I'm kind of equating it to other sports and what kind of attention that would have been if you had an NBA team, for example, on January 15th or so, that was just awful, just absolutely terrible, bottom of the basement, and then all of a sudden just went on a tear, got to the playoffs and made a huge run and now was playing for the conference finals. You wouldn't be able to leave any sort of night in the NBA without knowing that story. If an NFL team started the year 1-7 and made a run towards the playoffs, you would hear that every day of the week leading up to the conference games. I think the Indianapolis Colts almost did that, right? Didn't they start 1-5 this past season before getting their act together?
Yeah, I think so.
Was there a year, and I might have to look this up, was there a year the Chargers started 1-5 or 1-7?
Every year.
Yeah, I know, but there was one in particular.
I think I want to say it was like 3 years ago. They started 1-5 and then just quietly went on a winning streak.
This is what they do. They quietly do things, and then you have to wake up and go, oh my God, there they are.
Yep. I mean, it's always, they're one of the worst teams in September.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And they play really well towards the end.
Then they end up being one of the best teams in December. Like, there was a stretch, I think, like a four-year stretch or something, where Phillip Rivers didn't lose a game in December.
Oh, Yeah, he's amazing. It's remarkable.
It's like unfathomable to think of. Like, he didn't lose, like, I mean, what's that? 16 games. That's a full season of games. He didn't lose one game.
And it must be comforting because, you know, there are fan bases, if they go 1-3 in September, it's like they panic and go, oh, God, this is going to be awful. Because what they don't see is there's a potential for like a 6-7 game run. They go, well, if we lost one out of four, we're probably going to drop two or three more. That's going to get us 10-6. We're probably not going to win the division. Probably not, you know, be on the outside for a wild card. If we lose four more, it's going to be seven losses. Ah, forget it. I'm out. You know, wake me up. But Charger fans are like, nah, we'll make all that up. We'll be good. We'll make a run. Earlier, I asked about a perfect game. We just talked about Mike Fiers pitching a no-hitter last night for Oakland, his second 300 no-hitters in baseball. And I said, well, you know, obviously a perfect game is more rare, obviously, but I said, I feel like it was just most recently that we had a perfect game. No, I was wrong. The most recent perfect game was 2012. But in that year,
that's been a time.
Yeah. But in that year, there were three perfect games.
No.
That year. Yes. Phil Humber of the Cleveland Indians.
Of course.
Oh, sorry. The White Sox, I should say, beat Seattle 4-0. Then that happened in April of 2012. Then in mid-June, Matt Cain of the Giants, yep. No, the Astros. Yeah, the Giants beat the Astros. It doesn't really give you the team he plays for; it just gives you the score. So I have to figure out who won the game and then go back. Beat the Astros, and then in April, Felix Hernandez of the Mariners beat Tampa Bay 1-0 at Safeco Field, and that was the third perfect game of the 2012 season.
All right, King Felix makes sense to me.
That does make sense. Yeah.
The other two, are they even pitching anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. 2010, there were two perfect games, Dallas Braden of Oakland and then the late Roy Halladay of Philadelphia pitched a perfect game. Then it's sporadic. David Wells pitched a perfect game for the Yankees. Well, he claims he was hungover, but I don't know. Kenny Rogers pitched a perfect game for the Texas Rangers.
You ever notice those claims come out after the fact?
Yeah, and they come out way after, and I think it just adds to the legend, but I never
Doc Ellis throws a perfect game on LSD.
Yeah, I know.
Was this just a no-hitter?
It might have been a no-hitter.
All I remember from hearing about that story was that he gained success while he was on LSD and throwing that no-hitter. He gained success because the ball was telling him which pitch to throw.
Yeah, right.
I love that.
Fastball. Okay, fastball it is. Yes, slider to the inside part. Yeah. But just looking at how many perfect games there were, like there was one in 1922, and then there wasn't another one until 1956.
Well, because they didn't record them.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I'm chalking it up to.
Well, Cy Young got one in 1904.
And we named an award after him.
That's right, we did. We named it a award. And Don Larson pitched one in the World Series, and then Sandy Koufax had one, and Catfish Hunter had one. Len Barker was the first one I remember. I was a little kid in the 80s when he pitched one. And then we just had, you know, every four or five years, we'd go and not have one, and then we'd have one. So 2012, I mean, that must have been like a congressional investigation as to how in the world there were three perfect games in Major League Baseball.
The ball's juiced. Wait, no, it can't be.
Wait. Maybe it's unhittable. Maybe it's covered in grease, like an invisible grease and nobody can hit off of. And they randomly got the good baseballs.
Are they throwing that one, like, you know, that orange ball you can get on those infomercials that does all those crazy spins?
Exactly.
That's pretty impressive.
Three in one year. That's amazing. That is really amazing. But
that's got to be just impossible. I mean, it's so hard to get a perfect game.
God, a perfect game is impossible. Forget it.
I mean, I can rationalize getting a no-hitter, but I mean, you know, a perfect game, that means no walks. No one on your team made an error. I mean,
nope.
The error part makes sense. You know, it's like a team can go a few games without ever making an error. That's possible. But, I mean, not being able to throw a walk and just face 27 batters.
Yep, exactly.
That's crazy.
The Yankees and the White Sox lead the majors with three perfect games in the history of their team. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Because the other day, I was seeing all these reports or all these little articles popping up because it was the anniversary of Kerry Wood throwing his 20 strikeout game.
Oh, yeah, right. 98, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even that wasn't a no-hitter. He had 20 strikeouts, and that's not a no-hitter.
Right.
Or a perfect game or anywhere close to that. That's just, I mean, that just thinking about that, it's like, I mean, there were seven other outs or, that he got that weren't off a no-hitter. I mean, or just to think about, like, you know, 20, he faced 20 batters and struck 20 batters out. And somehow, some way along the line, I think he ended up winning the game, but it just, it's weird to think, like, even with 20 strikeouts, he still allowed people on base or walked someone.
Oh, he, even with 20 strikeouts, you can give up five home runs.
Yeah.
You can lose the game. I mean, you could, you know, you could strike out 20 and still give up six earned runs in a game. It's crazy, but your outs come from anywhere. But you got to keep the guy from hitting. I think a 20 strikeout performance, I wouldn't put it on the same level as a perfect game, but I think a 20 strikeout performance, I don't want to say I'd rather see that than a no hitter, because I'd still rather see that in a no hitter, but I think it's just as impressive, and because it's so rare to do that, and it's a masterful pitching, right? Like, you can pitch a no hitter with not your good stuff if you have great defense. If you get in the ball in the right places, maybe it's a cold night, maybe the batters are struggling. But you have to really work to get 20 strikeouts, because it's not the first time it's the second or third time when batters get up to the plate to face you again. They're not going to be fooled by something. They're not going to be fooled by an outside pitch. And you have to master the lineup. You may strike out one guy three times. That happens all the time. You might strike out two or three guys a couple of times in the at-bat. That happens all the time. But in order to get 20 strikeouts, you have to master the lineup. You have to master the one guy all the way through the nine guy all the way through. You have to master that lineup, and that's not easy to do. Think about the scouting that has to go into just something like that. It's really not just throw it and see what happens. I mean, you are every batter, you're like, well, he doesn't hit the high fastball, so I got to make sure that's right. If I throw one low and away, he always hits that. He's batting 500 against low and away fastballs, or whatever it is. You have to master the lineup. That's pretty impressive. I mean, that's really, really impressive to do. I know I told the story about Don Baylor purposely dropping a foul ball in 86 when Roger Clemens was going for 20 strikeouts, because he knew, like, this was a special night. He knew. But remember when we talked about this, about Armando Galarraga, right? And how Jim Joyce blew that call.
Yeah.
Right? Against when he was he pitching for the Tigers?
The Tigers.
And he blew that call. He handled that so well, but think about the immortality of being part of the list I just gave of perfect games, which is not very long, of pitchers who did this, and some of the names that are on it. I mean, yeah, there are names that you probably don't remember and we'll never hear from again, like Dallas Braden. No offense to him. He's a good analyst, but, you know, he pitched a perfect game. But Randy Johnson pitched a perfect game. Felix Hernandez, David Cone, Dennis Martinez pitched a perfect game. Mike Witt, you know, Sandy Koufax, you know, Don Larson, a Cy Young. I mean, it's only a handful of pitchers that have ever done this. And some of those names I just mentioned are some of the premier eternal names in pitching lore. And you could have been on that list if a stupid umpire makes it the right, you know, doesn't blow a call for you on the 27th out of the game. Right? And the other one that I was thinking about was, I think Max Scherzer had a perfect game disrupted by the Pirates a couple of years ago. I mean, these guys go 26 straight outs. No walks, no errors, nobody touches first base, and then, boop, they give up a hit. And that's got to be, I mean, can you imagine being a pitcher releasing a ball and just the split second where you know, oh, he got it. You don't even have to turn your head. You just, by the sound, direction, as soon as you release it, see the swing, and you're like, that's it. That's it. That's a hit. That might be a double or whatever it is. It's got to be demoralizing. Mike Fiers, two no-hitters in his career. I did it last night as the A's beat the Reds 2-0. All right, coming up, staying with baseball, because I got a news about Tim Tebow. Nancy Armour has an interesting column today at USA Today that says something I hoped isn't true. But we'll tell you about it next on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, doing a repair that needs a special tool? O'Reilly Auto Parts makes it easy with their loaner tool program. Check this out. Over 80 specialized loaner tools are available, and they're sure to have the tool in stock to help get the job done. Purchase the needed parts, put down a deposit on the loaner tool, return that tool in the original condition, receive a full refund. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Oh!
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hi, doing a repair that needs a special tool? O'Reilly Auto Parts makes it easy with their loaner tool program. Over 80 specialized loaner tools are available, and they're sure to have a tool in stock to help you get the job done. Purchase the needed parts and put down a deposit on the loaner tool. Return the tool in the original condition. Receive a full refund. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. I had a piece of cold pizza for breakfast, and now that's not sitting right. And I love cold pizza.
Yep.
I love cold pizza.
Need some Tums, don't you?
Yeah, now it's just not sitting right. I don't know why. And the pizza we get from our town is great cold. In fact, I could order a whole pie and let it sit and eat it that way. It reminds me a lot of New York pizza when you sit it down and it gets cold. It's better that way. But this is just not sitting right with me today. I don't know. Not to bore you with my indigestion problems, but I mean, that's just the way I'm going this morning. I'm rolling along. So pizza last night, hockey. I got so into that hockey game last night. That Avalanche Sharks game, Game 6. I was so into it. I don't know why I was into it. Again, I lived in Denver for 10 years, and I didn't give much thought to the Avs. I mean, when they were in the playoffs, I was into them, but they weren't my thing. But I am into this team for whatever reason. So I was flipping back and forth. They had the Rockets game on. They had that game on. I was like, ugh. In a couple of hours, I'm going to be doing this radio show.
But that's always the case with, unfortunately for the NHL, we don't need a regular season for them.
No, they're proving it that all you got to do is just get into this thing, and it's all everybody's got a chance. Everybody roll up, and
you get a cup, and you get a cup.
God, Boston just eliminated Columbus in 4-2. They just took care of the Blue Jackets. Now they're on to the Eastern Conference Finals. Listen, they're the best team of the teams that are left in terms of numbers, just like points and, you know, how they play during the regular season. Now that doesn't mean anything, as we found out in this postseason, but the Bruins, they could win the cup. I mean, they are more than qualified to win the cup, and that would give Boston 3 of the 4. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's still pretty good.
It's still pretty good.
You know, I was just wondering, with the Celtics after Game 1, were we drinking green Kool-Aid?
We were. I was. I thought the Celtics. Look, so I knew Giannis would make some adjustments. They would make adjustments for Giannis, but I thought Boston's defense was spectacular. I mean, the way they had it down, so not only Giannis got bottled up, they had it to a point where he couldn't even really get it to somebody else to sort of get some outside help. And then even in the first half of Game 2, Boston was still pursuing that kind of defensive intensity. And after that, it was it. Like, after the first half of Game 2, Milwaukee's got this team figured out.
They're ruining the quad.
They are, because the other three are great.
The other three have their own share of drama and storylines. Look, I'll give you an example. Houston and Golden State, it's been defined, and I hate to say it like this, but it's been defined by a lot of sloppy play, right? I mean, game three isn't as much on the Rockets as it is Steph Curry was abysmal, right? The Rockets played good in game four, but, you know, Clay and Steph can't hit an outside shot to save their life. Games one and two, it was all about officiating. And am I going to get the calls? Can Harden go to the line? I mean, it's just all of that kind of stuff. Now, Denver and Portland has really been defined by just two really good teams that just match up really well and just playing a really good series. They had the four overtime games. They took the day off, played a really good game on Sunday in game four. That was not a clunker. That was not a dud. It was an outstanding game. It was an outstandingly played game. And the Raptors in Philadelphia, we're watching Joel Embiid's ebb and flow, right? Up and down. When he's sick, he's not feeling that good, or when he's feeling fine, he plays great and they win. So there's three series that have just been great, and then Boston, Milwaukee. Once the Bucks figured this out, forget it. It's lights out, Celtics.
That was kind of a bummer.
Well, I am bummed.
I was hoping yesterday, I was figuring the two games we were playing that played yesterday, I was hoping all the series would be tied 2-2.
I thought Boston was going to win game four.
Exciting. Yeah.
I really did. I thought Boston would win game four. I didn't think it would be easy, but I thought that they would win game four because what was at stake is too much. They cannot, just like the Rockets at home at the Toyota Center, you cannot leave there down 3-1. You ain't going to win the series. So the Rockets had to win game four. And it's likewise the same thing with Boston. I mean, you've got to win game four. You've got to tie that thing up at two. Even though Milwaukee is home court advantage, you've got to tie it up at two. And now it's 3-1, and Milwaukee's got one win in the next three games to polish this team off.
Yeah, and you just don't see the Celtics being able to pull this out.
No.
And that's the problem now, because, I mean, Milwaukee, all they need is one.
And again, I mean, that's right. I mean, they only need one. So again, with Boston down 3-1, they really needed to shore up their time at home. It's too bad, too, because this series could have been excellent. This series really could have been excellent. But I love all the assessment of Kyrie. Like, he's gone. He's gone. Of course he's gone. I mean, have you paid attention to the season? He doesn't want to be there anymore.
But do the Knicks want him?
I don't think the Knicks want him. I mean, do the Knicks want why is Kyrie miserable all the time, right?
Okay, here's the thing, right? Who's the other guy rumored to go to the Knicks?
Kevin Durant.
And both of these guys are just miserable all the time.
Sad sacks.
Do the Knicks want this?
No. I heard a good explanation of this yesterday that, listen, there are just some players who don't want to be the leader of a team. And it's clear Kyrie thinks he wants this, but really doesn't want this. Like after game three, he said he should be shooting more. Well, that sounds like something a leader would say, but that's not what a leader would do, right? And so I think he thinks, no, I wanted out of Cleveland. I didn't want to be LeBron's second. I want my own team. Then he gets his own team, and he realizes, maybe I don't. Maybe I need another guy. But I don't want to say that, so I'll just say things that leaders are supposed to say. Like, I'll shoot more. Kyrie, it's too bad. Because Uncle Drew was a good movie. And now I'm looking at him completely different. I don't know. It's sad for Boston. They thought, remember when Gordon Hayward was hurt last year and they were like, but when we get him back, everything.
And they played incredible. And then all of a sudden they get to the playoffs and Kyrie goes down and they're still playing incredible.
They're still playing incredible. Yeah. They lost Kyrie.
Imagine this team with Kyrie and Gordon. They're going to be unstoppable.
That was it. They were going to be like, just give him a year when everybody's healthy. Give him another round of this.
And then they get the gift of LeBron leaving the East.
Absolutely.
Like, just put them in now. Just put them in the final now. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, they were supposed to take that over, right? They'll get some competition, but man, this team's too good. Forget it. Down 3-1. And not even down 3-1. Down 3-1 easy after that game one route. After that game one route, it was like, this is going to be a good series. And Milwaukee's like, no, not really. No, it's not. We'll be good. All right, coming up next.
Sad.
I know. One of our favorite baseball players is being asked to leave the sport. Nancy Armour from USA Today. Interesting column today on the sad state of Tim Tebow. We'll give you the details coming up. Plus, nobody wants to run in the Preakness, I guess. That's coming up as well as we continue on SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Listen, I was looking forward to Tim Tebow being called up, right? Well, I thought that would be a cool story, getting called up to the Mets late this season. He still can, Ron, but Nancy Armour at USA Today has a column today saying, Tebow, it's time to end this thing.
No, nope, she's wrong.
He's batting 130 with 32 strikeouts in 23 games at AAA in Syracuse.
You know
she
why?
She writes this. Yeah, go ahead.
Because he's engaged.
That's right.
Women weaken the legs.
He doesn't.
Or weaken the knees.
He doesn't want to spend time now. He wants to spend all his time with her.
Yep.
We all seen it with your best friend's got the new girlfriend. All of a sudden doesn't want to hang out with the boys anymore. She writes, Tebow isn't good enough to make the majors. Not this season. Not ever. Oh, he was close. Noah Syndergaard, remember in his prediction,
Nancy
said,
no.
I know. Noah Syndergaard thought he would be called up.
All he needs to do is just go on a tear.
Tony DeFrancesco, the manager of the Syracuse AAA team, said, quote, it's very difficult right now. Some of the pitching that's coming at him, he hasn't seen much of that at AA last year. Guys are pounding him in, and he has to learn how to make adjustments. Tebow's at an age where all but most successful major leaguers are beginning to wind down their careers if they're not already out of the game. And they're beginning to lose speed, and their hand-eye coordination isn't what it was in their early 20s. To think that Tebow can be the exception, that he can sharpen his reflexes and eye enough to become a decent hitter, defies common sense, especially when there's little to his career yet that would provide hope otherwise. But she makes a good point here, and this is where, because I'm with you. I was like, oh, come on, let's just give him a break. He could get out of this. The Mets might do it as if he's somewhat decent, might do it as like a little publicity thing. Who knows? But she does make a good point, right? He's going to get married. He's going to marry a Miss Universe winner, I think. I think she was a champion of that. Oliver Luck called at commissioner of the XFL to see if he'd be interested in playing some football. He's got a great career at ESPN as a broadcaster. Being engaged, starting a family, with these other careers, why does he want to keep doing this at 32 years old? Why does he want to ride the bus to these little towns and these minor league parks and keep striking out and putting work into something that's probably futile now? Like it's probably at a point where this might be where as far as he goes. Now, part of Tim Tebow's kind of persona is that I don't quit, I don't give up. But eventually you have to give up. Like eventually you can't, they're not going to let you do this until you're 40. Like eventually they're going to tell you thanks, but no thanks. And this whole rah, 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 keep trying. It's not always the best advice to give people because sometimes you send them down a very expensive and dark road that they're not good enough. Right now. When I was a kid, I really loved playing golf. Right. I loved playing golf, but I grew up in New Hampshire where I could play golf maybe 5 months out of the year before that was really decent. But I remember I practiced all the time. Right. And I took lessons. I used to go to school early to hit golf balls. I used to hit golf balls into a vacant field. I was hitting golf balls all the time. I wanted to get good. And eventually I got pretty good. And then the game went away as I got older. But I got to a point where I was getting pretty good. Now, let's say I was 14 and I said, I want to be a PGA pro, right? You could say, okay, let's set him up. Let's get him a driving range every day. Let's give him lessons. Let's get him on a golf course every day. It still doesn't mean anything. That still wouldn't lead to anything. You kind of have to have it, right? You kind of have to have something Phil Mickelson has that I don't, like Tiger Woods has that I don't. Or, I mean, my God, you could go all the way down the list on the PGA Tour to the guy who's 100th on the money list that he has that I don't. Is Tim Tebow wasting his time? Maybe this might be a talent he doesn't have, being able to hit major league pitching. He just might not be able to do it. Now he can go, oh, I'm going to try. That's great. But at the cost of what? You're getting married. You want to start a family. You could be doing other things. Why chase this? Now, I want you to chase it because I think it would be funny if you actually did get up to become an actual New York Met playing at Citi Field and proving everybody who thought this was hysterical, like me, and let it, eat a little crow. But at the same time, What if this just isn't in the cards for him? When does he know that? When do the Mets know that? I mean, betting 130? I mean, he's getting all the chances. He's striking out 32 times in 23 games. I kind of feel bad. I want him to do well because he batted so well last year in Binghamton. And he rode the ranks, but maybe this isn't in the cards.
No, I refuse to believe that. I refuse to accept that, Tony.
All right, I can respect that.
We need Tebow. We need.
I absolutely want him. I would love that day he's announced at Citi Field just to see what the sports world would be like out of this curiosity. Because, and I'm completely willing to say I'm in that group. I laughed my tail off at this story when it first was broadcast. And I thought it was funny, but it was also a little angry. I thought the hubris of this guy to think that he could just go, hey, you know, I haven't played baseball since high school, but how hard can it be, right? I'll just keep playing. And I thought that was hubris, a little arrogance, but I was wrong. He had an opportunity. He never asked for this. He didn't demand a spot on a team. He didn't demand that somebody give him. He said, I'm going to work and I'm going to work out and I'm going to find the best people I can. And then we're going to have a tryout type of showcase my skills thing. And we're going to invite scouts. And if they want me, they want me. And if they don't, they don't. And let's see what happens. And the Mets said, sure. And he struggled and he couldn't hit and he looked kind of ridiculous. He went to the wrong batting circle and it was just, there were times where it was a little embarrassing, but he got over that. He was like, oh no, I'll move past this. And then he started hitting the baseball. Then he started hitting some home runs. Then he started hitting to opposite field and all that other stuff like he did in Binghamton, made him an all-star. Now he's at the next level where and we all know this in AAA, major league level pitching comes and goes, right? Guys go up to the majors for a bit, come back down to AAA, hang out in AAA a little bit, get back called up back to the majors. Some guy does a rehab assignment down in the majors. So you're experiencing some really, really different level pitching at AAA than AA, and he can't hit it. But I do hope that, he can. I hope he turns it around because I still think this could be a really fascinating story for us in September if he does get a late season call up.
And you know what? And let's be honest. If the Mets aren't pulling in any crowds at all, they might still just call him up just because.
Sure.
But, you know, then it begs the question, does Tebow want that? Will Tebow, you know, go for it? Because all along he's never said that he wants to be like a showpiece or a prop.
My question is, okay, my question will be like if he gets a late season call up to the Mets, that's great. And everything, and he'll do it. Obviously, he's going to ditch the broadcasting, but that means he's going to ditch the broadcasting. Like they're not going to let him go do college football game day in the fall until the season is over,
which depends.
The Mets would be late September, right?
Where are they playing? You don't know.
That's okay, because by the time he gets to come back, it'll be conference time, you know, like in college football. There's like no need to talk about Alabama beating, you know, Wilmington, Delaware, right? Whatever the heck they're playing. Like, you don't have to talk about that, Tebow. But, you know, nevertheless, I think he probably would do it because I think deep down he does want to say, I did it. All you people thought I was stupid. I did it.
Yep.
I think he does.
I wish he didn't get injured last year.
I know. That's one thing Nancy Armour in the column at USA Today does concede, that some of this could be it does take a while to recover from that kind of injury in your hand. He suffered a broken hand. So he still might be in recovery. But I do agree with her in a little bit that this is a major commitment. He's getting married. He probably wants to spend every minute of every second with his new bride.
Because he's gearing up for...
Yeah.
Wedding night.
He's gearing up for wedding night. That's going to be a big deal to Tim Tebow.
For him. It's a new adventure, a new journey. He may not even ever, we may never see him again. To be honest with you. All things go well, he might go, wow, why did I wait?
And by the way, she's a Miss Universe winner.
Yeah.
All right, let's put it that way.
Yeah, no slouch there.
Yeah, this would be kind of like your first time swinging a baseball bat, like you go up against, like, you know,
no
like
pun intended,
Clayton Kershaw. Like if you're like a little kid, and you're like, what's this? Oh, well, you swing the ball and I'm going to throw a pitch to you. But instead of that, I'm going to bring out Clayton Kershaw. We're like, wow.
Yeah. Goodness. Got to have the stamina, if you will.
Way to go, Tim. That's
the wherewithal
great.
To stand in the box.
Shouldn't Tim Tebow go to the XFL, though? I think that would be kind of cool.
Well, I guess he's been pursued.
Yeah, Oliver Luck pitched him, told him, you should do the saxophone thing.
Why not?
He's like, no, I'm gonna stick to baseball.
Will they go after Johnny?
Oh, they should.
Because I think Johnny would be great.
Are you kidding?
I think first day there, he'd probably go, what, we don't get to pick our nicknames? I got one.
Yeah. I am totally surprised that Vince, I wouldn't be surprised if Vince McMahon started the XFL just to get Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
Right? Like, look at that Johnny Manziel kid. I want to start a football league just to have him on my roster.
He started planning it as soon as the draft happened.
Exactly.
And he saw Johnny coming out making the money signs. Like, okay, I can't make him a wrestler.
Exactly.
That won't be believable, but we'll figure out a way to bring XFL 2 back.
Yep. Exactly. I love it. I can't wait to see. I'm really excited to see where the XFL goes. I don't know if I'll watch it, but just the development of it and the hype for it.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to do the same thing we did with the AAF.
Yeah, but a little bit higher scale because of Vince McMahon.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we'll watch the first weekend and we'll say, God, that was a lot of fun. I'm glad it's back. And then we're just going to slowly like, hey, did you ever watch the XFL?
Yeah, I feel bad because I remember when the AAF launch was like, this is awesome. And then I would be like, I didn't watch. I don't even know what's going on. Who's playing? I didn't pay attention.
We all were watching, like, you know, because we got to see that hit, that big hit, with the San Diego,
the San Diego Fleet. Yeah,
I guess the San Antonio Commanders or Commodores or whatever.
Listen, you're better at me at that.
No, that's the only two teams I remember. And there was a team in Memphis and Orlando Apollos.
All right, there was the Memphis Express and the Orlando Apollos.
That's it. So we got, hey, you know what? That's not bad. That is half the league.
Not bad. It's probably better than a lot of other people could do. AAF.
It's probably a lot better than the people who actually were in the AAF can do.
The AAF's new motto is, don't call, we don't have any money. telling all the people, we don't have any money.
And how amazing is that? They're like, people are bringing up lawsuits, like, go for it. Just sue us.
Yeah. I'll never forget one year, my second year working in minor league basketball. I will never forget our general manager. Her name was Deb. She was a really smart cookie. She really knew her stuff. But I'll never forget, she was in her office, and we could hear her on the phone. And she's talking to this guy. And at one point, she yells, so everyone in the office can hear, she yells, let me make this clear to you. We have no money. We all started looking at each other like, oh, boy. I don't think the checks are coming on Tuesday. It was just looking like back then it wasn't funny, but now I think about it, it's like, God, how silly we were. It's so dumb. I'm sure that's what they're doing there. Like, people are like, hey, I worked concessions. We have no money. Click. You owe me for catering. Click. God, poor AAF. Sorry. Oh, what are you going to do? All right. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So now I hear that Country House is not going to run in the Preakness because of a coughing problem. What does anybody want to run in the Preakness? Wait, why don't we just cancel the race?
Country House isn't?
Yeah, now Country House says, nah, I'm out.
I thought that was Country Horse. No, I'm just kidding.
Country Horse.
So Country House isn't running in the Preakness.
Maximum Security is not running it either. Does anybody want to run in this?
Is Maximum Security, did he get suspended? Because he got disqualified. Does he have to serve a one race suspension?
That's a good question, right? Does he have to? No. They just don't want to run. They just don't want to run the Preakness. This stinks. This stinks for horse racing. Look, Country House wasn't going to win the Triple Crown, but still.
And Omaha Beach?
Yeah, Omaha Beach. Yeah, that horse had a coughing problem, too. Let's just call it quits and start all over again next May.
It's almost like an epidemic. Is there a flu? Is there a horse flu?
What's going on with these horses? Now, I don't know who has the broadcast rights to the Preakness. I think it's NBC still, right? I think they have all three of the Triple Crown races, right? It doesn't bounce to another network. But they've got to be just devastated. I know, right? You pay the money to the broadcast for broadcast rights to Triple Crown. You do it in hopes you get a Triple Crown horse, right? Because the Belmont ratings are always very good when there's a Triple Crown horse. Even though we've seen it now twice in the last, 4 years? Still, it's a historic thing no matter what. So it's still kind of cool. So you're hoping that the horse will win the Kentucky Derby, and then the Preakness is about the same length, and you hope that that happens again. And so that way you get a Triple Crown horse, and the ratings are just through the roof for the Belmont, so people will watch it. But when you don't, now a 65-1 shot wasn't going to win the Triple Crown anyway, but the Preakness might have drawn some eyeballs just in case. Now it's out. You don't know the rest of the field. Who cares? And now nobody will watch that or the Belmont. So there you go. Too bad. This is what they say all the time. Whenever we get to the Preakness and the Derby winner doesn't win the Preakness, they go, well, nobody cares about the Belmont. And it's too bad because the Belmont's a good race. The Belmont is where, remember Secretariat when he won by a million, right? Where it looked like that, like a lone horse.
Right.
Like on the racetrack. Like was like that horse was like out of, like just kind of snuck its way on the track when Secretariat won in 73. That's a historic venue. I love every now and then I'll go on YouTube like during the horse racing season to just watch that again, that Secretariat race in 73. That must have been mind-boggling to the people there. Like that, seriously, that horse looked like a horse got loose on the track and was ahead of the other horses in the race.
I guess that's us watching Usain Bolt from time
maybe
to time.
Maybe so, yeah.
Seeing that far of a him have that much of a lead, like that's not humanly possible.
There's that iconic shot of the jockey turning his head just to see how far away the rest of the field was as he was going down the front stretch. Oh, Secretariat. SB Nation AM.